We are going to start, however, with Tim Henschel, CEO of Hotel Planner, a very cool company that I met Tim just a few months ago and was fascinated by the story of his entrepreneur journey and invited him to come and speak with our entrepreneurs here and share some of that journey with us. Congratulations, Tim, on what you've achieved so far, and welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me. Calling in actually from a hotel in Kent. We have one of our big events going on right now for the PGA Tour that we title sponsor. It's the last tournament of the season before we have the championships in Spain. So hence my dress and the background. But yeah, this
tour. There we go, PGA Europe Tour. Fantastic. So that's actually a good segue, Tim, into introducing our audience to Hotel Planner. What are you doing with Hotel Planner, and you know, why are you in the PGA Tour?
Well, we're into sports because sports travel makes up about 30% of the 3,000 groups we do a day worldwide. We started out 13 years ago as just a little startup in California, much like a lot of tech companies. My background was from Cornell Hotel School with a concentration in computer science, and my major was hotel management. My family's been in the industry for multiple generations as hotel owners, and you know, it's always been a passion of mine to get into the business, and since the business now mainly for bookings is digital, we specialized in group travel online, and so that's how Hotel Planner was born 13 years ago with me and co-founder John Prince, who came from IBM as a senior software engineer, and he heads up our technology division as our CEO. He's based out of our headquarters Palm Beach. I'm based out of London. And together we're growing the company up to 120 employees and over 25 million now in turnover. And is our revenue and contracting over half a billion in hotel group contracts a year. So, yeah, that's basically a little intro.
Great. So, Tim, I remember actually even maybe 10 years, 12 years back, there were a whole bunch of group booking, group hotel booking, group travel planning websites and startups that have got lots of funding and so forth. Now, what happened? It sounds like those have imploded and you have emerged as the winner in the category. Tell us about what happened in the competitive landscape in the market.
Yeah, the landscape is always changing online. There's still startups that are coming in this online group space, and I'm sure there always will be other people looking at the space. It's an exciting space. You know, we're a fast-growing company, so people see that, and it definitely makes them interested in getting involved in the space. When we first started in 2003, there were a couple of large, well-funded startups that were burning through around $20 million a year. And we kind of all had the OTA market divvied up in terms of different partnerships. At the time, we were exclusive with Priceline to do their group travel, and then two competitors had Orbitz and Travelocity. But we'd always been, or you know, we had some angel funding, but you know, we grew organically after being profitable by year three. So we didn't have a big burn. We were, you know, just spending what we made. And so when the market crashed and the debt crisis that it was 2008, those guys, you know, unfortunately had to go under. Well, fortunately for us, unfortunately for them. And then we picked up their partnerships with those OTA partners, and now we power every major OTA for group hotel bookings of 10 rooms plus online. So yeah, it's been some aggressive growth in the last 5 years from that.
So take us a little bit back to the very beginning. You said you became profitable in 3 years with a little bit of angel funding. Give us a bit more color on that journey in the first phase. How did you become profitable so quickly? What were some of the secrets and strategies of achieving that milestone quickly?
Well, for me, it was aggressive weight gain. You know, I had always been an athlete in high school and college, and then once I got out of school and started this company, I didn't exercise at all. So I went from an ideal weight of around 170 to 180 all the way up to 250 pounds. And that basically just had everything to do with 16-hour work days. So, you know, I'd say that a lot of the bootstrapping came from you know, getting our hands dirty and just you know, disciplined workers, I guess. Yes, you know, 16-hour days, 7 days a week, that sort of thing.
You know, what I observe also, Tim, is that you were not going mindlessly after eyeballs. You were going after, you had a real business model. You were actually booking hotels and collecting commissions right from the beginning, right? So you had revenues right from the beginning.
Yeah, so well, you know, our market is niche, so only 2% of every individual search is a group search online. So, you know, if 100 people search Expedia for individual hotel rooms, 2% of those will, you know, be looking for a group. So,
yeah.
You know, luckily, those groups are going to be around 20 to 30 times bigger in terms of the demand for rooms than individuals. So it makes for bigger revenue on each transaction. But finding that transaction is a little tougher. So we always had to, we couldn't go mass market all the time. That's why, you know, we have to look and participate in things and sponsor things where there are groups like, you know, the PGA where you have a lot of corporate groups that attend PGA events. You guys got guys weekend golf groups, and then there's women's spa groups based around golf resorts. So, you know, there's group business based around that sector, and then of course team sports in general. You know, we have NFL teams that we've been sponsors and doing their team travel for years and years and years, like St. Louis Rams, Washington Redskins, San Diego Chargers. NBA teams like LA Clippers, NHL, Florida Panthers, over here pro football teams in the UK like Millwall, AFC Wimbledon, QPR, Park Rangers, a little bit. So, you know, we'll do that and then we'll partner with, you know, big companies that are big in the wedding business. So we're going to get that business as well. So it's just about finding your customer out there more than just going mass market.
So you went specifically segment-wise and did some direct marketing into the sports group travel segments to get those, to find those transactions, yes?
Right, right. So, you know, every group market segment we look at is a specific market to us, and so that's how we've kind of made a very big world a lot smaller, so we can target you know, our exact customer, and of course that.
Well, and also what strikes me is that you turned what perhaps your competitors were looking at as a B2C business into almost a B2B business, which is much easier to. Well, B2B businesses you can deal with sales as opposed to pure marketing, and that makes things a lot more deterministic. If you have a value proposition that resonates.
Yeah, no, definitely. We always looked at it as we wanted to not reinvent the group booking market per se, but make it more efficient through our use of technology. So when other competitors were trying to get people to just slap down a credit card and do it 100% on their own without any help from anybody, we were looking at the process and saying, you know, how do we, you know, use digital payment to make the process easier, but not take away the human interaction, which was essential to make sure that groups
would get booked efficiently and at the best rate. So what we did was we regionalized and we took people that were on property at prestigious group booking hotels, big conference hotels, and we recruited them to work for us and stay in market. And then anybody that's going to book a group into that city, we assign them to that person. So they've got 10 plus years of experience working on group contracts from prestigious hotels in that area. They know the city, and then they can be a very good resource for the first-time group planners or experienced group planners that we're putting them in touch with to find the right property for them, the perfect property, because that person is in market and has an idea,
yeah,
knowledge of that property.
Like a personal concierge.
Exactly, and then also what's going over those dates too. You know, on the system, we have tens of thousands of big events going on in every city. That's all proprietary information to us, and how it affects rate in that city, so we could really educate our groups on how they're going to get the best price in that city based on the dates and what they're looking for.
Terrific. So you said you raised a little bit of angel money, but more or less grew organically. What was the amount of angel financing that you took?
So it was, relatively small by today's standards. Luckily, though,
you drop off? We can't hear you.
Oh, you got me now? You got me now?
Yes, you got it.
Oh, okay,
now. Go. Yeah.
Sorry about that. Oh, yeah, so it was six figures. That wasn't on purpose. You know, all of a sudden we start talking money are you kidding me? No. it wasn't seven figures. It was six figures. I can't really say the exact amount, but it's small by today's standards of the money that's out there. But luckily the internet was a lot more cash friendly at the time. You know, what cost $1.50 a click now in advertising was, one-tenth or one-fifteenth that back then. So we can make the money go a lot further.
And eventually, though, you bought out your angel investors, and today you and the management own the company 100%. Tell us a bit more about how did that happen, what was the thinking behind that, and so forth.
Sure, yeah, so, we've done really well growing the company, and, it was just time for the angel funders to take some of those gains off the table, and it allowed us to reissue those shares to all our employees, and mm-hmm. We have an employee equity pool, and now all our employees are vested in the company, so we all have the same vision, and we can say we're 100% employee-owned right now.
Okay. And was it difficult to negotiate with the angels to take them out? Were they willing to cash out? What was that process? What were the dynamics of that process?
It's tough like any negotiation. Especially when bigger money's on the line, it's always going to be a tougher negotiation. So, it took place over months, but all parties reached agreements, and everybody's happy. So it's good.
Yeah. So you did one other piece of financial engineering that I found fascinating when we talked for the Entrepreneur Journeys interview, which is you bought real estate and used that real estate to borrow money against for working capital. Talk a little bit about that's an unorthodox strategy in the venture style startup business, but it sounds like it worked out very well for you. So please talk about that a bit.
It did work out really well. We kind of got caught up in the real estate boom that everybody else did too. So, you know, we were in downtown San Diego as our headquarters back then, and you know, new buildings were going up left and right, and what seemed like amazing deals, since, you know, real estate was increasing 10 to 20% in value every year, was, hey, let's grab some of this, and we did. And we put our office space in there, and then as we grew, we bought new office space and then put more, you know, it got bigger and bigger and bigger. So eventually we ended up moving our headquarters to West Palm Beach, where we are now, and I can say that we do lease that space now, but we amassed some real estate, and then it ended up working out really well for us, because when you know, interest rates got really low after the debt crisis, we were able to get some really good debt financing to help grow the company too, based on all this collateral that we had from
and that's non-dilutive.
Say again.
That financing is non-dilutive.
Yes, right, and non-dilutive. It is a very, very, very good point, because it's amazing how fast the equity actually will go. You know, people think the money, it sounds like a lot, but it's also amazing how fast you can spend it, and you can't go and create more equity once it's gone. So, holding on to it is important, and right now we happen to be in a really good space where debt, is, you know, interest rates are so low. So the debt is very reasonable. So with the right cash flows and everything else, you can finance the company's growth pretty nicely on the debt side. And we have a very strong banking relationship with PNC in the U.S. and then RBS in the U.K. So well.
So now you're at about $25 million in revenue, growing 20% year over year. You have a pretty solid company. You have no difficulty getting bank financing. Where to from here? What is on your mind? Of course, you know, we see an incredible bubble market right now where companies are raising money like crazy, and this is equity money. You know, they're basically signing off their life through liquidation preferences to get to $1 billion valuation and blah, blah, blah. Your thought process seems to be very different and very down to earth compared to what's going on in Silicon Valley today or in the broader market with this unicorn mania. Talk to us about how you think about your next phase.
Well, we also hope to be a $1 billion company one day. You know, at the fact that we're 10% margin business, you know, the revenues that we're actually producing in the industry are a lot bigger than the $25 million that we were recording as our working capital. You know, we're talking about, as I said earlier, in the group hotel contracts and the room revenue only, we're contracting $500 million. And we know that our groups are spending, you know, two times more on food and beverage at the hotels than just their room revenue. I mean, you can imagine if you were doing a wedding at a hotel, you know, the cost of the rooms are minimal compared to what you're going to pay for the reception and everything else. So, you know, our groups are producing a lot more revenue than just that $500 million that we're recording. But our goal is to keep growing 25% to 50% in top line year over year, and soon, you know, that $25 million we hope to be $50 million, and then eventually $75 to $100 million, and then right in our direct contribution of room revenue will be over $1 billion for our hotels, and then when we take in the F&B, it'll be $3 billion total. So $2 billion of F&B and food and beverage is what I mean by F&B, and then $1 billion of hotel room revenue.
That's a gross. That's not your revenue, so to speak. That's a gross merchant gross volume
right now,
that you're doing.
We're at $500 million for the room revenue contracted at hotels. Room revenue contracted.
Yeah, but that's not your revenue though. That's the hotel's revenue.
No, because we're not the merchant of record. I mean, our groups are all paying the hotels directly. So yeah, we don't record that as our revenue. But
yeah,
it's still I mean, that revenue means something to our hotel partners, which is our suppliers. So I'd say that revenue is important as a judge into what it. But I kind of get what you're saying, which is, you know, if we were to be valued just based on bankering, you know, what bankers would value at us, we're not that, you know, important in terms of that number. But in our industry, we are important. And frankly, I don't.
You're very important. I'm not saying at all. I'm not by any you know, stretch of imagination saying you're not important. I'm very, very appreciative of what you have done, and I admire what you've done. So I think, but my point is, what you have done, if you extrapolate that out, let's say, you know, you're at 25 million revenue right now. You know, in some number of years from here, whether it's 5 years or 6 years, I don't know exactly how you're going to grow going forward and what strategies are you going to implement. But if you get $200 million in revenue, you can show a growth rate of about, you know, 40-50%. Chances are you would qualify for a $1 billion valuation based on banker assessments. Not that it matters. But I'm saying that you have built a solid company and you're on the trajectory to build a solid company that is comparable in, you know, impact, maybe a little bit slower. You haven't built a billion-dollar company, billion-dollar market cap company in 5 years. Who cares? You don't need to. You've built a significant company.
To tell you where I come from exactly, you know, we didn't build the company for bankers. We didn't build the company for financiers. We built it for customers and suppliers. So, you know, when I think about what the hotels think about what we're doing, that's important to me. When I think about what my customers think about what we're doing for them, that's important to me. When I think about what our partners at our, the different OTAs think of us, that's important to me. Our partners with the pro sports teams that we work with, they matter.
Yep.
But I tell you what, I've never lost sleep on what any bankers ever thought so far, knock on wood.
Hallelujah. This is completely in tune with the philosophy that we believe in. It's 1 million by 1 million. Our definition of entrepreneurship equals customers, revenues, and profits, financing, exits, valuation, all these are optional. These are not core entrepreneurship issues. The problem, Tim, is that the world has a disease. And you'll see an article from me next week on this topic, is that the world has this disease that entrepreneurship, it equates entrepreneurship with capital and all the associated exit, valuation, unicorn mania, all this crap. And that's what's confusing young entrepreneurs all over the world. By the way, this used to be a localized Silicon Valley disease. Now it's become a globalized, you know, disease that Silicon Valley has successfully exported to every ecosystem in the world. Everybody is thinking the same way. Everybody is thinking like lemmings, that everybody should run after venture capital. There's a huge, huge problem. So a question to you, are you thinking about exit? Does it matter to you? Do you worry about exit?
No. Building a better company always for my employees and for our customers and our partners, like I said, that's our goal that we work on every day. And exit is not something that I spend a lot of time focusing on right now. So 25%, 50% growth is, because all of our partners are publicly traded and they have to adhere to that kind of growth strategy. And so we have to support them in that way. So growth is good. But growth, we should see, if we're doing right by our employees and our customers and our suppliers, we should be growing. If we're not growing, then we're dying. As the old quote says, I totally agree with it. If you're not growing, you're dying, because it shows you're not creating enthusiasm for what you do and for your product and for your people and everything else. And enthusiasm is something that I have, you know, a passion for the business, you know, and that's what I measure it by, you know. And then there's other ways to call it, net promoter score, which we have a 70% net promoter score that we're happy to brag about. I have 100% approval on Glassdoor as a CEO, happy to brag about that, 100%, you know, I can't go wrong with that. So what do we have? We have really high customer service ratings online for the company, 4.3 out of 5, It's looking
and
really
can you
good.
Grow to the extent that you are aspiring to grow in the next, you know, foreseeable future, I guess, organically, or do you need infusion of capital to achieve those kinds of growth rates?
I think we would definitely have grown organically for the last 13 years, and we will grow organically. Capital can always increase, but at what cost is always the question, and to increase that growth. We have a belief that if we build the best product out there, people will find us, though, too. So, you know, we're still heavy believers in that. And that's we show that from our, like I was saying, that promoter score, the people who repeat to use us and tell their friends. So that's always, you know.
So today you sit in this enviable position where I'm sure you're being offered capital by lots of different investors. How do you think about that? Do you even consider capital? What is the thought process as you're processing these interests from investors?
So we have lots of conversations. As I said with a previous interview we've had before, you know, I'm always happy to talk with them because, you know, some of the smartest people in the world are on the financing industry and banking industry. So you'll never go wrong with having a conversation with them. Not only do a lot of times they know your industry really well, they know other industries and can give you so much, you know, insight into what other people are doing and what might work for you and problems you may encounter. You know, to take some money from some of them that are really, really well connected can't go wrong with that too, because then they're making introductions to help you grow your business faster and everything else. So, they're great at what they do, and I can't say one bad thing about the VC market out there, the private equity market. The U.S. especially has the greatest, you know, private equity and VC market in the world. And look at the GDP growth and look at the entrepreneurship we have in the U.S. that they don't have anywhere else, and all the other countries are jealous of it. So how could I ever say anything bad about that? And, you know, I mean, it's great. It's a great industry, and it's filled with talented, really hardworking people that probably get less sleep than I do, and travel more than I do, which is pretty hard to compete with. But you know, for what we were saying before, we have a goal, and we have a very talented executive board made up of a lot of people that have a lot of experience in the industry. So we know that if we execute correctly every day and build the best product, then we'll get there for what we need to do organically too. So we want to take the right capital at the right time if it ever presents itself, but it would have to be, you know, it would be tough to put the deal together. It won't be overnight. Let's put it that way. We didn't work for 13 years to make a quick deal on it on an equity basis. You get what I'm saying?